You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
There's an adage attributed to surgeons: a chance to cut is a chance to cure. For a time, the statement was probably true. A doctor had limited ways of seeing what was going on inside a body and correcting a problem. Now human and animals are benefiting from a myriad of minimally invasive procedures that can diagnose, treat, and often cure conditions where previously a scalpel could never go. Erin Branter is a board-certified veterinary internist at Advanced Critical Care, Emergency and Specialty Services in Los Angeles, who has harnessed the magic of interventional radiology and endoscopy. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Swipe It's a revolutionary new product that literally swipes away cat hair from virtually any surface. You know, most of us struggle with a roller or vacuum cleaner to clean up cat hair, but anyone who has tried either of these knows they just don't work very well. But Swipe It's patent pending glove has a magnetic like quality that removes cat hair from almost everything. And best of all, Swipe It's is machine washable, so you can use it over and over again. To order, just visit swipeits.com. That's SWIPEITS. A simple solution for shedding.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Branter, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
Good. First of all, explain, what is interventional radiology? I think people have probably heard of endoscopy. Okay, that one they may have heard of, but interventional radiology, what's that?
Well, to break it down into its simplest terms, it's using diagnostic imaging. So things like x-rays or video x-rays called fluoroscopy. It's using CT scans or CAT scans, MRIs, to both diagnose things but help us get into the body and fix things. And then in terms of the endoscopy, you're doing the same thing. You're using tiny scopes to get into places in order to fix things and diagnose things, where previously you'd have to do open surgery.
And talking about little scopes, so most people have, you know, thought of, okay, passing a scope down into your throat, looking to see if you have a stomach ulcer. And, you know, that has to have a decent size to it, little cameras, grasping devices. How small have these endoscopes become now?
Well, there's two basic types of endoscopes. The one you were describing for the stomach is flexible, so it can go around curves and so on. And the smallest one of that size is small enough to get into a human ureter, which connects the kidney to the bladder. And that's what we use for very small dogs, male dogs. In terms of the straight metal ones, which are called rigid, because they're rigid, the smallest one, there's a prototype out for a male cat, and that is just millimeters in diameter. It's tiny. So we have all sorts of sizes that go all the way down to that size.
That is absolutely amazing. I had the pleasure of seeing a presentation that you put on for a group of veterinarians, and it really seemed like science fiction. It's like, really? I think most veterinarians aren't aware of what is available, and definitely most clients and pet owners aren't. How did you get involved in this specialty? Because I know your training, your travels have taken you literally all over the world in your veterinary training.
Yeah, I always love to travel, and so I've tried to incorporate my education with being able to continue traveling. And I guess I'm Canadian, so I started my bachelor in Canada. I'm from British Columbia. And then I did another 4 years of vet school, but I was able to do that in Melbourne, Australia. What a wonderful experience. And I came back this way and did a year internship in Manhattan in New York, and then a three-year internal medicine residency, and finished that up in Wisconsin. And then back to New York for a full-year fellowship. And that's where I really got interested in interventional stuff. In my residency, I did a little bit with the human hospital, and then towards the end of my residency, I knew that that was where I wanted to go. It just provided so many options for my clients, for their pets, that just weren't available before. It was like a whole new world when I found out that there was a few vets doing this kind of thing. So that's sort of my path on how I got into it ultimately.
Fascinating. And what's also fascinating is, again, this minimally invasive techniques where you and I may have a procedure where you end up just having a Band-Aid put on your belly versus having, you know, a huge incision. What, besides not having to have a big incision, what are some of the other advantages of minimally invasive techniques?
Well, I think that ultimately, the goal is obviously our pets, who are our clients, ultimately our patients, don't wear bikinis most of the time, unless they're in Venice Beach. But, you know, for us, the big thing is, one, to reduce pain and to increase the ease of recovery. So we want our pets, who don't understand what we're doing to them when they have to go to surgery, to be able to go home sooner. And that's a huge one. The other part of that is that sometimes surgery doesn't work. You know, there's areas of the body that surgery just doesn't work on. There's tiny little ureters in cats that are 4 of my hairs. Doing surgery on those is very challenging, and not everyone is adept at doing that. And so sometimes it's to reduce pain and to reduce hospitalization times, and sometimes it's to find solutions where surgery just doesn't work.
You were talking about surgery and ureters, and some people would go, so why do you have to fuss with a cat's ureter part of its urinary system? And I know there have been times cats will come into me and they will have crystals that will form. They will get large enough bits of grit that can actually form obstructions. You can try to backflush, do whatever, and sometimes you just can't move these. How do you get, is that the main reason why you're doing the surgeries? What would be some of the indications for that type of a surgery?
It is actually stones. So cats, as many of your listeners know, humans form kidney stones. And those stones pass and get stuck in the ureter, in the connection between the kidney and the bladder. And that causes kidney damage because of the backup of the pressure. So I would say 85% of why I go into a cat or a dog ureter is because of stones. And they don't heal very well with surgery typically, and they often reoccur with surgery. So I put a small silicone stent in them, and that allows those stones to pass into the bladder over time and not obstruct the kidney.
You must not drink a lot of coffee in order to have hands that are so steady that you can do this, because people listening may not realize this is such a small area. How do you get access to that area?
Everything that we do, the goal is to make the tiniest hole and do the minimum amount of damage to any organ system that you're accessing. And so what most interventional procedures start with is a tiny needle. And it's the same size needle that we pull blood from in cats and dogs. Once we access the system, and when we access it, we use something called fluoroscopy. And I mentioned a little bit earlier, ultimately fluoroscopy is a real-time or a video x-ray. So I get to watch what's happening with everything that I'm doing. So I use a tiny needle, and through that needle, I use guide wires. And those guide wires I can see under fluoroscopy. So I know where they're going in real time. So ultimately, through guide wires and catheters, I gain access to systems through a tiny, tiny hole, a very small needle. So there's minimum damage to any organ system that we access.
So besides the urinary system, what other procedures have you been called on to do?
There are also certain types of dogs that have tracheas or their windpipes that collapse, and so they can't get air in. And we can very easily place stents in those tracheas and open them up. So that's one other area. There's also tumors in dogs' livers that they cannot take out surgically. And when they can't take them out surgically because they're too big or wrapped around a vessel, what we can do is access it basically through a tiny little hole in the femoral artery down in the leg. And with a series of catheters, we put little beads and that have chemotherapy in them. And we put them directly into the tumor. So that dog has no to very little systemic chemotherapy, and the tumor has now both had direct chemotherapy, but also a removal of its blood supply. So it's called chemoembolization. It's actually a very common procedure in humans, and we're doing more and more of them in dogs. Those are a couple examples. There's so much that we do. It's pretty exciting. Any body system ultimately can be accessed if you just have a working knowledge of your basic principles. So
having working knowledge and having the expertise and having the equipment aren't all one and the same. So thankfully, you know, there's people like you, hospitals like Access, where animals can go. Listening to this, I have a feeling this is not going to be an inexpensive proposition. I know every animal is going to be different. Each case is different. But what's the investment approximately that a client could be looking at for this type of procedure?
I agree. You know, each procedure is very different. And so my procedures are comparable to any boarded surgeon, and there's several of those. So what a client would pay for open surgery is equivalent to what I do. And sometimes what I do is less. And so depending on the procedure, oftentimes the equipment is what costs a lot for us. You know, the stent itself can cost upwards of a couple thousand dollars. But depending on the procedure, it can be anywhere from $2,000 upwards of $12,000. But that is what people are paying for boarded surgery right now. It is not more than a regular surgeon.
And as you said, sometimes a blade just can't go where you are going. And many times there's just no alternatives to having a life-saving procedure, such as some of this interventional radiological procedures that you're doing. This is just amazing. So you're talking about cats and dogs. Are those the common species that you treat? Are there other species that you're treating?
Yeah, ultimately, because we have so much specialized equipment, we often get called on by zoo vets or exotic specialists to help them out with situations that they just don't have the tools to get to where they need to get to. So, for example, during my fellowship, there was a turtle with a very large stone in its bladder. And because they did not want to do surgery on this turtle, because they have to cut the carapace, they called us in, brought the turtle to us, and we did a very, very long procedure called lithotripsy. And people might be familiar with that. Ultimately, that is where you break up kidney or bladder or ureteral stones with a laser. If it's in the body, you use a laser. And so we took a very long time, and we were able to laser this stone in the turtle's bladder. It took a lot of hours, but we got it done, and he did not need a surgery. So all that was in a minimally invasive way with the scopes that we talked about. Just recently, we had a little frog come in, a parrot frog, beautiful frog, and he had eaten too much of his bedding and gotten impacted. So his
what
whole
size
stomach,
is a parrot frog? I just have to ask. I'm not.
I know. They're beautiful. It is approximately 3 or 4 inches.
Oh my goodness! It's teeny.
It's tiny, yeah. But the mouth is very large, and so Dr. Petritz, who is our new exotic specialist at Access, she's wonderful. I'm so excited we have an exotics department now, came to me and I said, well, what does the frog eat? And she goes, well, it can eat mice. And I was like, well, that's pretty big. If it can get mice down, it can get one of my scopes down. And so that gave me an idea of what I might be able to get in. And so ultimately, we were not able to remove the impaction because it was too far down from where our scope could go. But we used the scope to access both just past the stomach, to really infuse water and get things moving a little bit. So we used a combination of scopes and massage, and the frog passed all of that debris and came back for a recheck last week, I think, and his name is Billy. He was doing fantastic. So that was a pretty wonderful case. And there certainly has been times when tigers also get cancers and stones, and we can stent those as well. So really, it's cross-species. We're just trying to find solutions for anything. And once you have that open mind frame that anything is possible, it certainly isn't any species. It's just a different anatomy, which we are, as you know, used to in veterinary medicine.
I'm talking right now with a big smile on my face at this thought of doing endoscopy in a 3-inch little frog and surviving with Dr. Erin Branter. She is a board certified veterinary internist with Access, and Access is Advanced Critical Care Emergency and Specialty Services in Los Angeles. We'll be right back after the short break, learning some more fabulous, fantastic, and far out things that they're doing in veterinary medicine. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Victoria Schaefer, aspiring actress, babysitter extraordinaire, college student, and animal enthusiast, is on her own for the first time in New York City. Follow Victoria and her two dogs, Rue and Echo, as she cares for her furry friends and juggles home life and career, all the while managing to survive in the world's most hectic city. The exciting animal adventures and secret stories from both ends of the leash that make up The Tales of the City.
Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Branter, so doing this procedure on this itty-bitty little frog was just amazing. You had mentioned tigers. What are some of the other really fun things that you worked on? What's one of the weirdest things maybe that you had to do? Most exciting to you?
I think the frog was a big one. We also had a parrot who had a difficulty swallowing. So we did an endoscopy on that and found that he actually had a tumor in his stomach. We've done endoscopy on bobcats before, lizards. They can get stones as well. I'm yet to do a snake, but maybe that'll be coming up. But ultimately, even on the things that we do with cats and dogs, I think it's all exciting. So
needless to say, all of this is going to have to be done under anesthesia. The risks any different for a pet undergoing your procedures versus general anesthesia with a boarded surgeon?
Not at all. General anesthesia is general anesthesia. And, you know, many of my clients ask me if it's possible to do things under mild sedation. And they do that in humans all the time. So all of these interventions that we do in humans are often done with mild sedation because they're not painful. We just can't ask our cats and dogs and frogs and whatnot to stay still. And we need them fully under for these procedures. It tends to be maybe a lighter anesthesia in the sense that they're not reacting to any pain. And so sometimes they wake up a little bit more quickly. However, it's similar to any other anesthesia that you would need to do for an open surgery.
Dr. Branter, you are one of a very small group of veterinarians doing these types of procedures. If we have a pet owner who's listening right now and maybe in the middle of Kansas, Iowa, or Montana, where their local veterinarian is not doing procedures like this, what are their options?
Well, depending on where they are, there's certainly a handful of people doing a little bit of everything. There aren't too many places that have a full program for interventional radiology endoscopy. The main one would be in New York. That's where I did my fellowship, and that's the only fellowship that is currently being offered. And that's run by Chick Weiss and Allison Brandt, and they have really ultimately pioneered a lot of this in veterinary medicine and trained a lot of the people who are doing it. So there's a smattering of people doing a little bit of everything, but if they call any of us, we'll kind of lead them in the right direction. We kind of all know each other and who's doing what where, and we can typically get them to the people who are doing it. It's often an academic institute. So
with the veterinary schools throughout the United States, is this an area that is now being taught? Because when I graduated, no, this was not available. So is this something that more veterinarians will be trained in the future?
It certainly isn't something that's being taught routinely by any means. it's just too subspecialized. In my residency, personally, there was nobody doing any interventions in Wisconsin. So when I found out about it, I was just floored at what was possible. And so it depends on the university, but it's not routinely being taught. It's something that there's probably someone who has an interest in it within that university and is trying to foster it. But ultimately, there's very few, aside from New York, clinicians who are doing it full-time. And I think that the students, even in those institutions, are probably getting a little bit of exposure to it. So it's really new. It's really new, and there's not a ton of people doing it and/or teaching it.
What other new and fascinating treatment modalities and diagnostic modalities are coming down the line that you're exposed to that maybe myself I haven't heard of, such as, you know, what you're doing right now, that you really say, oh, this offers such great promise in the future?
Well, I think that all of the minimally invasive approaches are gaining headway. And I think that there's a reason for that. I think owners certainly are getting more educated. They want the best for their pets. Their, you know, dogs don't sit on the farm anymore. They're part of the family. And so I think that all of the things that we're doing with ureters, with tracheas, with urinary stones, liver issues, even incontinence. So for those dogs that are incontinent, we have endoscopic procedures that we can laser ureters, we can put collagen in to make them less leaky, any sort of colon stricture, intestinal polyp, we can do all that endoscopically now. And I guess in terms of really new things, stem cells are really taking forefront in veterinary medicine right now. And we know that they're good for arthritis. A lot of people are doing that. But you can put stem cells anywhere there's inflammation. And chronic kidney disease is a big issue in dogs and in cats. And there's a new study going on where we take stem cells from just a little bit of fat in the belly from the pet, have them cultured, and we put them in the artery that goes to the kidney. And hopefully what we're doing is reducing inflammation and then reducing the scarring of the kidney. So prolonging these animals' lives.
Speaking of stem cells and these intravenous methods of doing it, I've also heard studies going on at UC Davis where cats, especially Abyssinians, love to have this chronic gum disease, gingival disease, where in the past, sometimes one of the only options was literally extracting all of their teeth, and now they're doing stem cell and having great success. One of my own clients has an Australian Shepherd with a basically autoimmune disease that's affecting the oil glands in its skin, and this poor dog was just losing all its hair, coming up with horrible skin infections, tried a little bit of everything, and now started the dog on stem cell therapy, and it's 2 years out after having stem cell and is doing amazingly, amazingly well.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the other, you know, stem cells, what you do when you put them in a vein is they go to every space in the body. It's kind of like giving systemic chemotherapy. You're hoping they get to the place that is the issue. And the nice thing about being able to access basically any organ system is that you can put them directly into the area that you're concerned about. So instead of me giving it into the vein and the arm and it going into the lungs and the liver and everything first, and I kind of want a little bit to get to the kidney, if I put them directly in the artery that goes to the kidney, I know that the kidney is getting the first shot of those stem cells. And so that's what's so fun about interventional, is that I can do that with chemotherapy as well. If there's a tumor that's just not responding to conventional therapy, you can either remove its blood supply or put local chemotherapy into that particular tumor. Prostates is one example. Bladder tumors is another. So really, the possibilities are pretty endless.
And most people hear about chemotherapy and say, no, I am not putting my pet through that. And thankfully, most pets do seem to respond so much better, not having the adverse side effects that people do, but they still do. So with your interventional radiology, being able to get it right into that site, that is spectacular. I can imagine the side effects are dramatically reduced.
Greatly. The study that they were doing in New York with Dr. Weiss, ultimately, when they looked at the systemic levels of the chemotherapy when they were doing the liver tumor, it was ultimately zero to none. So those dogs were getting all of that chemo in those little beads, just all into the tumor itself, which is amazing.
Dr. Brander, this is just, you know, my mouth just keeps falling open. You know, she's doing this and they're doing that and these treatments are available. It is amazing what's happening in veterinary medicine. That's one of the reasons I am so pleased to be a veterinarian, because the curve of advancements is just logarithmic. What other things are being done at Advanced Critical Care, Emergency and Specialty Services that might surprise the listeners?
Well, we're now a very fully functional specialty hospital. So many people don't know, even my own family didn't know, that there was veterinary ophthalmologists that do just eyes, that there are veterinary dermatologists that just do skin, that there are dentists that just do teeth and, you know, that's it, oncologists. And as you said, we view cancer treatment very differently in veterinary medicine. That could be its own segment. We just use lower doses. We're not willing to make our patients sick for it. And for us, we have a wonderful surgical department. We have a new surgeon that just came in who is from University of Penn, and she's a very strong ureteral surgeon. She's wonderful. Dr. Carey is great. We also just built a new MRI suite, and we have a neurologist, so someone who just does the brain and the spinal cord is, you know, that's, most people don't know that either. And again, the exotics department, which I think is very exciting. There's very few of those around. There's just nowhere to bring those pets, and now there's a nice option locally, which is great. And Dr. Petritz is wonderful. She's always pushing the envelope, and is a great veterinarian, and it's exciting to have her with us, bringing all those wonderful pets in.
So, Dr. Branch, if people did not live in this area, of course, they can always fly their pets in. You'd be able to see them. But sometimes just checking around, checking with your local veterinarian, letting them do some research, finding out what's available in your area. You're right, it may be a university veterinary teaching hospital that may be able to help them. But there are options. There's so much more that can be done. Are most of these procedures covered by pet insurance?
Yes, they are. You know, having people with pet insurance, which is getting more and more common, has absolutely changed how we're able to practice. Most of the pet insurance that I've been dealing with will cover up to 90% of what I do. That's immense. I mean, that's a huge, huge step forward for us to be able to actually treat these patients. You know, a lot of the time I tell people, I say, this is not painful. This will only help, but it's a lot of money, you know. And when they have insurance, that part of the negotiation is gone. It's really nice. It's nice as a veterinarian and to be able to do your job and to do it well and not have to have that conversation.
Dr. Branter, this has been fabulous, fascinating, and I so appreciate you bringing the advances of veterinary medicine to the listeners. If you're listening and you have any questions about what you want us to cover in the show, please feel free to drop a line to thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. I'll try and get your answers on the air as quickly as possible. And I hope you listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Dr. Branter, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.